Hello and welcome to Chimecast. From emerging issues to new innovations, the Chimecast channel brings you the digital health leaders and business executives from around the globe who are making an impact on the way we transform health and care. I'm Russ Branzell, your host for this podcast and the president and CEO of Chime, the College of Healthcare Information Management Executives. We continue to live and evolve through challenging times for healthcare professionals, their industry partners, and the people we all serve. Leaders across the industry have proven their talent and determination as they innovate to transform their organizations to meet the moment and shape the future. We're proud to know those leaders and support them here at Chime. Today, we welcome three incredible leaders into the Chime podcast booth. Together, they've recently been awarded, soon to actually physically receive, the Baldrige Foundation 2024 Leadership Award for Cybersecurity. Welcome to our special podcast on healthcare cybersecurity, where we're going to delve into the challenges and solutions for protecting the digital health infrastructure. Today, we're joined by those three distinguished leaders in the field that I just mentioned. First, we have Mari Savickas, the Vice President of Public Policy at Chime. Mari is at the forefront of advocating for policies that enhance healthcare cybersecurity and has a wealth of experience in navigating the complex landscape of health IT regulations. Next, we're joined by Carter Groom, the CEO of First Health Advisory. Carter's expertise in cyber risk management and his leadership in providing advisory services have made him a trusted voice in helping healthcare organizations fortify their defenses against cyber threats. Last and by no means least, we have Greg Garcia, the Executive Director of the Health Sector Coordinating Council Cybersecurity Working Group. Greg's role in facilitating the public-private partnerships and his deep understanding of cybersecurity policy making him a key player in shaping the future of healthcare cybersecurity. Together, these three leaders bring a wealth of knowledge and insights into our discussion today as we dive deep into a conversation and explore how collectively we're going to safeguard our healthcare systems and these cybersecurity threats. Welcome, Mari, welcome, Greg, and welcome, Carter, to the program.
Thank you, Russ.
Thank you.
All right, let's jump right in. And I'll start with the recent announcement with the recognition the three of you have for our, not just our portion of the industry, but really at a national level, one of the highest level of recognitions you could get. And that is the Baldrige Foundation and their recognition of your leadership in cybersecurity. I think you all are about the 14th, 15th, and 16th persons to ever receive this ever in the country. So Mari, just to make it simple, we'll say you're the 13th and they're the 14th and 15th. That way
well, you got it before. So I get the unlucky number?
Okay. You get it before they do. So in the pecking order. But first of all, I'll just ask, what does this recognition mean for you all? Mari, what do you think the recognition of something so significant with, not by your peers, but literally at a national level, this recognition means for you?
I mean, I was really surprised to receive it. I think that because we're so connected on the policy front that any awareness that we can draw to cybersecurity, I mean, even though it's through an award, is actually good for our sector. So for me, it's a lot about we've come a long way. It's a highly collaborative experience. There's no single person in Washington that makes one change. That's never the case. And the fact that we are recognized as leaders in cybersecurity means that it's elevating the profile of our sector.
Wow. Carter, we're going to jump over to you. And you know, actually, you may be one of the first, if not the first ever from, I'll use one of those dirty words we don't use very often, vendor community, supplier community that's ever been recognized for this award. So, you know, what does it mean for you?
Well, first of all, thank you, Russ, for having us. I'm honored to share the recognition with Mari and Greg and Julie Chua. And certainly for all those that are out there doing the hard work of making our sector more resilient. I've been following Baldrige for nearly 20 years, and you know, I've always viewed their leadership and performance framework as the gold standard. And so just to be honored and recognized by Baldrige, I consider there's no higher honor than this.
Wow. Well, I know for the two of you, and I'm going to jump over here, Greg, with the same question here. I know neither of you even knew you'd been submitted by your submitters on this. And Greg, the same thing. The first time you ever knew is the time you got called to say, oh, by the way, you just got this recognition. And he's like, it was a little confusion. You're like, well, what? One, how did I get it? And so, Greg, tell us about the recognition.
It's a great recognition. And Carter says he's been following it for 20 years because he's a youngster. I've been following it for almost 40 years. I was a young professional just getting my career started in the late 80s at a time when the United States was suffering from an economic malaise in terms of competitiveness and quality and manufacturing, particularly with the Japanese. And Malcolm Baldrige, the Secretary of Commerce at the time, took it as his mission to do what he could through Congress and through the bully pulpit to raise the level of quality and manufacturing and excellence in American industry. And after he died from a tragic rodeo accident, Motorola was the first company to get the Baldrige Award through very exacting standards. And then they moved it to an individual award for excellence. And throughout my career, I've just tried to be excellent. And this is, I think, an affirmation of that. So I'm proud.
Yeah, I can't wait to April to see each of you have those medals hanging around your neck. It is quite the ceremony, and so well-deserved by all of you. Well, now that we've established your expertise in this sector, let's jump right into where we are in today. And we are sitting at the Vive conference here, but we know what's occurred last week as we go into this week, which was the recent cyber attack on Change Healthcare, and really an impact on our entire industry. If you think about the gravity of this attack and what's occurring here, you know, so how do you see the nature of what just occurred, the not just the risk, but the impact that it's happening? And I would even say occasionally just the chaos of trying to coordinate communication, thought, what's really happening. And of course, for us, what did it do? It really occurred over almost a weekend, which even makes it more complicated as we go along. And Mari, I know you do an amazing job at this, of trying to coordinate a million minds and a million communication threads and make any sense of it. So as you kind of see this occur, what do you see happening, and not necessarily specifically about this situation, but also just coordinating a message and clarity in a tough industry?
I mean, so grateful for your leadership at Chime to bring everyone together, because they do find us as a source of trusted information. I do think the sector, even though we've made a ton of progress, I think this incident caught many people by surprise. And that just shows that we have a lot of work ahead. And I'm sure that, you know, with Greg's leadership at the helm, that those next 5 years are going to be so critical. And you know, I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned, and we're still really in the eye of the storm. So coordination, collaboration is literally of the utmost importance, and there's going to be a lot of lessons to be learned. I think we have our work cut out for us.
Yeah, appreciate that, Mari. And Greg, you know, often we look up at you as kind of the security big brother for us. And how did you see this kind of going down, communication opportunities, and really kind of the feel of the impact of an industry that you try to help coordinate?
Yeah, I liked Carter's quote, actually, the other day, which is that this is our colonial pipeline moment. And, you know, this shouldn't have come as a surprise to us. I mean, we should have been, over the years, recognizing that the SolarWinds attack, which was one mouse click, a corrupted software update goes to thousands of networks. This should not be a surprise to us. So we, there's two issues. One is, how do we prepare for that? In many cases, you can't if it's a third party provider. But how do we respond to it? Yeah, we need to get more oiled, more wired with our government partners, with our industry partners, to have a strong incident response information sharing capability. And that's really focused on the Health ISAC as the operational hub for the industry. But it also puts a punctuation point on what we are going to announce tomorrow, which we are excited about, which is the 5-year Health Industry Cybersecurity Strategic Plan. And that's providing us a wellness map, if you will, over the next 5 years as to how we can collectively get better at a whole range of cybersecurity risk management functions that might head off such an attack in the future. And if not head it off, at least make us better able to respond.
Yeah, There's never really a good opportunity for reactive cybersecurity events. It's never a good thing. And I know, Carter, you've worked really hard with this with your customers from your organization, but really as an advocate for the industry as well to take a much more risk-associated proactive approach. So I'd love to hear your perspective of both a person who's getting your phone ringing off the hook. And by the way, even the young people have no idea what ringing off the hook means, but Carter does. And yeah. So, and as well as trying to figure out the voice for the industry.
Yeah, you know, first of all, the impact of this is massive, and we probably won't know the ultimate impact for a good length of time, but certainly it's gotten the attention of not just those of us in the security community, but leaders in healthcare. The revenue impact is a major issue here. And, you know, I've considered this, and I don't think this is an overstatement, that this is a national security issue, right? And this is not trying to, you know, create fear and uncertainty and doubt, but we've absolutely been attacked. And now we know that this was a state-sponsored attack. And we need to kind of, you know, address it as such. And, you know, I think about awareness a lot. We talk about awareness in cybersecurity, and part of the challenge is getting awareness out to those individuals that weren't in special chat groups or text chains or certain like that. There wasn't enough awareness coming out. And when I think about resilience in this industry, awareness is the first step, right? If we were aware as a health sector in those first day or two and what to do, I think it would have made a big difference. And, you know, but we're seeing the result of, you know, sort of all that confusion, Russ, that you talk about. What's happening? What do I need to do? You know, what's the messaging? It's just not been coordinated. And that's something I think we need to work on as an industry.
Yeah, it's interesting when you think about this. And in times when people are looking for clarity during uncertain times, which this really is, when they can't figure it out, they try to create their own certainty. And that certainty often creates confusion. And I think if I can go back and read all the texts and emails and phone messages over the last 4 or 5 days, I will tell you there's 1,000 points of confusion in a period of such uncertainty. And I think that's one of the things we can think about in improving our collaboration, centralized communication. Greg, I'll start over here with you. As you think about that concept of collaboration across a whole industry, and that's your viewpoint, is you got to sit up high at that really high peak looking down at all the rest of the industry. What does that mean to act? What would be kind of that nirvana state of if we ever were really collaborating as a whole healthcare ecosystem?
Well, I mean, I think it starts with personal responsibility. So I talk to many, many companies throughout the year in an orientation call if they want to be a new member of this organization. And I put it quite bluntly, which is, your organization is part of the nation's critical infrastructure. Therefore, you have a responsibility to do this, to come to the sector council, to come to the aid of an industry in extremis against our cyber adversaries, and to collaborate with one another. Because the concept that none of us individually is as smart as all of us collectively, maybe that's the nirvana. It's the hive mentality. Whether we're a hive of bees or a hive of ants, they have, don't they? They have a collective intelligence that is instinctive. And we don't have that yet because there's too many people in their own silos. So this is a national security responsibility. It is a homeland security responsibility. And ultimately, in healthcare, it's a responsibility to the patient and the patient care. Cyber safety is patient safety.
So obviously, Carter, you have a collaboration responsibility with people that entrust you as a business partner, but also as kind of an extension of their responsibility to collaborate with community and patients and all that kind of stuff. How do you approach this as a leader, knowing you have this, and I'll use words, I don't try to use dramatized words, a massive responsibility to be a communicator in this process?
Yeah, and I think just to piggyback on what Greg was saying, part of the challenge that we're facing and you know, that responsibility is the individuals that are, you know, communicating the latest information want to share that with only their trusted sort of, you know, friends and colleagues. And I think that's a cultural issue that we need to overcome. There's a lot of legal ramifications with sharing information. And so I have to be extremely careful in the information I share with our clients and how it might impact their communities and their patients and their organizations. And so this is something for further discussion, no doubt. How do we expand that awareness while keeping that, you know, sort of ethos or spirit of trust that whatever I'm saying is not going to be held against me in the future from a liability perspective?
Wow. Yeah, we heard that yesterday, didn't we, Carter? A couple of the Chime members we were talking to said, hey, I'm willing to share in a small group and be really vulnerable. You do this with every Chime member, we're going to go silent on you. And it's like, well, where's the perfect sweet spot here? Do you have to create 50 communities of 50 people? And
so right. I need to consider that. I can't just send out a mass email to all of our clients because each client is in a unique situation in dealing with this challenge. And so that has to be somewhat, you know, bespoke in terms of the messaging that I get out to those clients.
Well, Mari, I'll pick on you just a little bit here on this. And because I think you really do play the role of trusted voice and trusted listener too, to an entire population of healthcare executives who sometimes look at you and go, okay, Mari will have the answer. In a world where often there isn't even an answer. So how do you help create an environment where obviously people trust you implicitly, but also at the same time be trusted enough to be able to tell them, I don't know? I mean, how do you live in that world?
You don't pretend like you have all the answers. You know, perfect example was just one of our agency stakeholders clearly did not have a full picture of what was going on. And so we escalated it, which is my job, right? And just said, hi, we have a problem here. Could you please get the right people involved? And told the members, take a deep breath. It may not be okay today, but I don't have the answers today, but that's what I'm supposed to do is, right? The government affairs is supposed to be like that liaison. And I think we open the door and we open it pretty widely. And I don't need to know all the details. I just need to know that things are moving. And so I didn't have all the answers, but I think we're getting closer. And that goes back to some of the things that Carter and Greg said is like the communication, the collaboration. It's taken us years to foster the initial building that road. And is it perfect? No. And I don't always have the answers, but I doggedly chase them down, Russ.
Yeah, you do. it would be horrible for me to describe you as a dog with a bone on that one. I will just say a tenacious leader trying to do the right things for all of our leaders that are there. You know, as we think about this, and even I gave opening comments from the stage just a little while ago for this whole event, and we changed those comments literally last night, realizing kind of still where we were with this event, completely changed the comments we made to start off on this. And I think it was one of, I won't call it an epiphic moment, but maybe a deep moment of thought when we put the line in there, and who knows who will be next. And I think in the world of dramatic things and very difficult things that happen, you always wish, well, there won't be a next one. But we know there will be. There'll be, and I think this is why we have some sympathy and compassion and truly understanding for change as they're trying to figure this all out. Because who knows who next? It could be one of our foundation partners. It could be another vendor in the industry. It could be any health system today, probably is a health system today, that's grappling with us and the attacks are occurring, or maybe even a vulnerability. So it's not a matter of if there's next, it's just when it's next. And so knowing that each one of you has said, we need to get better even at reactive, we need to get better at being ready for this to occur. As you think through this, what are some things that maybe, I don't want to say you're missing, but that we should probably sharpen the edge on to really be able to respond, create resilience? I love that word. Matter of fact, Baldrige just changed their theme for healthcare to be, and Baldrige to be, a sector of improving resilience. And I don't even know if you knew that. It literally just changed in the last couple of months. And so they're actually going to update the criteria to judge resilience, and they're updating the cyber framework for that same reason, to understand resilience. So Carter, you know, kind of, I'll say supreme leader of the day. That way I'm not saying king or queen or anything of that nature. Supreme leader of the day, and you've got to do a couple of things to improve resilience, not only for this country, but for entities themselves that may be dealing with this and will deal with this. What are you going to do?
Yeah. and first of all, I'd like to say with what change is going through, you know, I heard the word, let's give them, or the phrase, let's give them a little grace. And I agree with that. I mean, They're running their playbooks. They're doing the things that I would expect that organization to do. And I guarantee you they're throwing every bit of resources towards this that they can to fix this issue. In terms of resilience, you think about incident response and you hear the term or phrase, you know, if not, but when, right? And that's becoming more and more popular out there, but you have to have a plan, right? So we call them incident response plans, or, you know, resilience plans, if you will. And, you know, so many organizations don't even have that, right? And if you then have one, you need to practice that plan. You need to run tabletops, right? So these are just the basics, right? We saw this in the cyber performance goals. You have to have these plans. You have to practice them. You have to communicate them. What if your CEO is on holiday hiking, you know, to base camp in Mount Everest, and you can't get in contact with your CEO, yet he was a part of that plan for an incident? You need to figure out, well, what's the next step? What is my contingency for that plan? So these are the things that are basic hygiene principles that organizations need to start following. And there's been great work coming out of Health Sector Coordinating Council to that point. And I would point everybody to follow that.
You know, I think it's interesting because cybersecurity doesn't discriminate. They don't care if you are a small rural hospital. They don't care if you're the largest academic center or the biggest medical group or the smallest medical group, one physician practice. They're coming after you. And when they see the vulnerability, they're going to get you, which means the smallest of the small have to be ready and the biggest of the big have to be ready. So that's tough from an industry perspective to be ready at the most minute level and at the biggest health systems in the world. Greg, how are we going to do this proactive? What are your thoughts?
It starts with a culture of cybersecurity. That's a much higher level. And it starts at the C-suite, but even beyond the C-suite, I think what we need is a national level awareness campaign that makes cybersecurity a habit. Department of Homeland Security has done a good job with if you see something, say something. We say cyber safety is patient safety. But cybersecurity in the healthcare industry is now a public health issue. CDC puts out a lot of public health advisories. Smoking is bad for you, and high cholesterol means you're eating too much fat and salt. All of, you know, this kind of a national level awareness campaign where you put the first point of responsibility on the CEO and the C-suite of any organization, it's from that level that the culture of cybersecurity trickles down to being a habit and a matter of personal and enterprise resiliency.
You know, it's interesting the way you put that, because I'm on a board of a health system and they said cybersecurity is not a cybersecurity strategy, it's an organizational strategy. And it has all to do with the fact that you have to have a good CISO and a good CIO and that kind of stuff to orchestrate the programs, but it's an organizational strategy all the way up to the board level. And they have to understand that. And I think some organizations still haven't quite figured this out. All right, Mari. Well, on this note, I'm going to ask you, again, I'm going to kind of change the scope because you're not going to run our cybersecurity program here at Chime. But what you are responsible for is all these members and them trying to figure this world out. How do you see us proactively engaging with them and helping them just get one or two increments better? Let's not take 100 increments better yet. Let's just get one or two. What can we do to really make things better in this industry?
I always like to say, you never want to eat the apple whole, right? That's a recipe for disaster. You're going to choke. So you're going to take a few bites, right? We have excellent ambassadors and champions like Carter. We have the 405D best practices. Julie's behind those. She's not here. So you start picking them apart a little bit at a time. Take one bite. And no one wakes up every day and says, you know what, today's the day I'm going to have a heart attack. Said no person ever, right? So the way to not have a heart attack is to do preventive things like have a lifestyle of wellness, have a healthy diet, exercise. These are, you know, you mentioned heart attack, like no one wants to have a heart attack. So right now we're always just taking the aspirin at the last minute, so to speak. And so we need to start, you don't have to boil the ocean one day. You don't have to eat the whole apple, but you do have to take one step forward. And like the NIST cybersecurity framework, for example, it is not a maturity model, but it is, you're not gonna do the whole thing all at once. You're not gonna do all the four, but you do have to take one step and then a next step. And it has to be more proactive, not reactive. And education to the members.
Well, and it has to be continuous. I love the way you put that.
Continuous and flagging.
Never
for
stop.
Just saying, hey, listen, today, please join the Health Sector Coordinating Council. It's free.
All right. Hey, one last question here. I'm going to change it up a little bit because that's always what I do. And so, Greg, you've been a great partner with Chime. You've been a wonderful leader for our industry. Maybe a little less about Chime, but more just kind of at a macro level. What does the partnership of this community mean to you? And not just the ability to shape cyber wellness and cyber proactiveness, but, and I'll use the word resilience just because I'm placating to our Baldur's friends. What does that mean to you? What can we do maybe just to get a little bit better in that arena?
Well, I would say, you know, Chime is one of our leaders in the membership, and what this collaborative community means to me. I held a similar position with the financial services sector. Okay, that's big banks. JP Morgan announced that they are putting $500 million into their cybersecurity program. That was 10 years ago. So they were sort of, yeah, we got this. Yes, we're a big target, but we got a lot of money, so we can pour money into this problem. I come to the health sector, and there is a hunger and an energy, and it's really, really motivated by that principle of cyber safety is patient safety. We're all here for the same reason, and it is the patient. It is for the health of the nation. And so, to me, that is inspiring, and that is motivating. The question of how we get better at that goes back again to the culture of cybersecurity, where many of the people who are representing their organizations in our membership, they're the CISOs, they're the CIOs, and I hear a lot, I'm just not getting the budget I need. I'm not getting the buy-in from the board. So something is missing there at the top, and I'm not sure what we need to say and how many more colonial pipelines and change healthcare incidents need to be persuasive to get them to move. But that's how we get better, I think, is to really be able to make it a business issue, as you articulated. It's not a cyber issue, it's an enterprise risk issue.
Thank you. Well, Mari, what do you think? What do you think about this industry that you've been so tasked and also take with an extreme and respected passion to help coordinate this? Kind of what does it mean to A, represent Chime in this industry and the voice that you need to collaborate with?
I mean, I think you actually, your last word, collaborate with, right? It's collaboration all the way. We wouldn't be sitting here today if we didn't all sing, you know, hold hands and say, like, this is a top priority. I think we've successfully elevated the profile in Washington, but it's an ongoing challenge. You're competing with other priorities, right, at any given time. But at least we've increased the awareness. If you go back in time, say, you know, 8.5 years ago when I started, there's a very different mentality. I mean, WannaCry was initially they blamed on the providers. But we've been able to completely pivot that. We've hit reboot on the sector. We have Greg on the scene. We have champions like Carter. We have 405D. We have the law that you were helpful in passing, 116-321, that takes a little bit more of the stigma out of if you have a breach. But I mean, we clearly have a lot of work to do, but I think we've been able to work together to elevate that profile. So yes, we have work ahead of us, but you know, in advocacy, if you don't celebrate the incremental wins, Russ, you can be pretty sad.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, Carter, kind of a last word representing this group and some amazing peers of yours here in the industry that we'll all be having, including Julie, which we don't want to forget, who will also be on the stage with you all here in a couple of weeks, well, a couple of months. Your thoughts on kind of the community at a macro level and what it means to you?
Well, I'd say, just to follow up on Mari and Greg's comments, you know, it is my belief that what we're talking about here and sort of protecting the patients and the communities and the nation is not only a business imperative. And we talk a lot about that in terms of cybersecurity, but I also believe it's becoming a moral imperative to protect those communities and patients. And so that's something that I hope will be seen, you know, from a cultural perspective, Greg, to your comments and the leadership, that it is a moral imperative to protect and do these things. From a community perspective and even Chime, I mean, it's so much a part of my identity and it combines the most cherished personal relationships that I have with the very serious work that we do. And it's intertwined. And that's where the passion comes from that Greg's talking about. And I just, the Chime community, the community of cyber professionals, they get that and they embrace that. And I'm proud to be a part of that. And I'm also proud to give back as much as I can. And so I just appreciate the opportunity to talk today, Russ.
Well, I want to thank you all for being on the podcast today. And for our listeners, I'll paint a little picture for you. Those that are Star Wars fans, in that one episode or that one movie where you saw Princess Leia placing that medal on Han and Luke and Chewie. I'm not going to tell you which one's Chewie. It's definitely not Mari. But that scene where everybody celebrates, I think that's what you can picture in your mind as these three great professionals, along with Julie, will have this medal placed on them in a few months. It is truly something special. So again, thank you all for being on this program today.
Thank you, Russ.
Thanks, Russ.
Hey, and also we'd like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning into this episode of the Chimecast program. As always, you can visit us on chimecentral.org/media or Spotify to listen to this and all these amazing healthcare leaders. Continue to innovate, transform, and change, and create change to advance our industry and improve health and care throughout all the communities you serve. But for now, stay safe and God bless.